Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. And is this why everybody's moving to the suburbs? Swingers party in Burr Ridge?
Excuse you. It's a little early to talk about swinging.
On the weekend of April 29th, the Red Party was held at the Crown Plaza Hotel in Burr Ridge. Two people answering the hotel's phone at different times confirmed the event was taking place. One acknowledged it was a party for swingers. The hotel's general manager did not return a message for comment. Who has the down low and can help us out here about the swingers party?
312. I almost gave my cell phone number. 312. Yeah. No,
sure. Call me. Call me. Text me. I just have questions. I think our audience has questions like, can you go stag? I'm not asking for myself. I'm asking for our audience.
312-642-5600. Turnkey.pro answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
The event was held by Friends Night Out. Oh boy,
that sounds like a committee.
We host events where normal, everyday people can dress sexy and enjoy a private night out, according to the website.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. I bet you do. Eyes wide shut. I saw Revolutionary Road. I get it. You know, the suburban doldrums and the grass is greener and all that sort of thing. One of the ads says FNO, Friends Night Out, for those of you not in the know.
Well, you got to be hip. You're all about acronyms. Right?
FNO takes over the entire hotel. You don't want to miss this one. The Sunday Room and Play All access ticket, $200.
What if you see somebody on the PTA? You know, like, hey, doesn't your son go to my daughter's school?
That's a conversation starter.
Would it get a little uncomfortable?
And the next thing you know.
So wait, this all access room, that's not, huh? Mm-hmm. The Saturday Room and Play All Access.
Yeah. Don't tell me. I mean, you being in the media for so many years. I mean, you know all about this. You know what time it is.
I've lived in 7 states and I've covered some pretty crazy things in my time. I'm not kidding. I'm not doing this for a bit on radio. I've never covered a swingers party. I didn't know.
What about when you were part of that original Sex and the City crew with Anna DeVlantis and Natalie Martinez?
Nobody kissed anybody else's boyfriend, if that's what you're asking. No, we would not do that. There's some things that are sacred.
I think that's a G-rated version of what sounds like is going on in Burr Ridge.
Yes.
I know. Your heart was with Edward James Olmos.
Oh, we used now. Stop that already.
Uh-huh.
I made out with him once. Oh, it was so gross. It was so gross.
Burr Ridge trustee Tony Schiappa had denounced these rumors.
Oh, yes.
Are they rumors? As inaccurate. Although I think he's just having a difficult time wrapping his mind around the concept, because he also said, I'm Catholic. I go to church. That's not who I am. People look for that stuff, have alternative lifestyles. I don't look for it. That's why I don't know about it. What they do in their own rooms or at the Hotel Crown Plaza is what they do. If they want to lead a life like that, that's who they are. I don't look for that stuff. I rather read the Bible. Well, okay. Very good, Tony.
Good, Tony. But that doesn't absolve you from finding out whether or not this took place in your jurisdiction. In fancy,
well, it's not,
Burr Ridge. It's not Burr Ridge, a gated community.
Well, he doesn't have to find out. I mean, it's not his job to find out. It's not illegal.
All right.
I'm just wondering if this is what, helps explain the bum rush to the burbs.
So it wasn't just crime after all. It was sex parties.
Chris and Lamont, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy.
Yeah.
Listen, I'm just telling you, these things are not all they crack up to be. I was staying in the Canal Park Inn in Duluth, Minnesota, a few years ago when they were in there. And these are not a good-looking group of people.
Wait, first of all, when they were in there, what, they'd taken on the road?
So you were not a
I don't know.
You were not a participant. You just saw the event. You saw
I was in the bar, yeah. And we asked them what was going on, and they were telling us. So believe me, you don't want to go there.
Well, wait, how does it work? What are they? I mean, is it like you put your keys in a bowl?
They do like a Henny
I'm
Youngman. Take my wife, please,
like
and they mean it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They were all hitting on each other. It was just, it was pretty weird. Anyway.
And they were not good-looking people?
Thanks, Chris.
Yeah.
Well, that's what he said. How many times did he say they weren't good-looking people? It's about what you'd expect. It's like the nude beach. You have this vision of what it's going
to
be.
I have been to a nude beach.
And then, oh, really?
Yeah, it was called Black's Beach in San Diego.
Tell us more.
People were naked. Some looked good. Some, you wanted them to put their clothes back on.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't there long.
Mm-hmm.
But I did go to Nude Stock as a reporter. Nude Stock was in
as a reporter.
Kalamazoo.
You were embedded?
Yeah. They sent me to, it was a 24-hour nudist colony rock concert.
Well, you have
and I was
nudist
there with
colony
the guy
roots.
From Kansas, the singer from Kansas. I interviewed him, and he said, I thought it was more like Woodstock, not that people would be walking around naked.
Pun intended.
And they were, and I did my live shot out of Wood TV. There's WOOD TV.
Well, you have roots in the nudist colony.
Well, yeah. Well,
a
nudist lived in my house.
Yeah.
The house on Moki Lane where I grew up. 915 Moki. It was mirrors were everywhere.
Uh-huh.
On the ceiling, on the, every single room had a mirror.
And ever since then, that's been your decor at your place.
So tech.
So the nude beach, did you partake in the nude beach?
I did not partake in the nude beach.
Why? So why did you go?
Just for my friends
prurient interest?
Yeah. Hmm. I was visiting San Diego. Hmm. San Diego un Wales.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, for JJ. Yeah, I've heard. Mary Kay, Western Springs.
All right. Guys, did you know the pineapple is, the national hospitality sign? I have them all over my house because I'm into, like, Hawaii and Kanapali and all these places where I've been. Mm. Pineapple. So if you walk around the grocery store and you turn upside – Amy, get this. If you turn your pineapple upside down
– What does it mean?
That's supposed to be the sign.
The sign for what?
Yes. Sign for I'm into this, into the
swinging. Really?
Yes.
So
and they're going on here.
You can't balance a pineapple upside down.
No, I know.
Unless you have other items to jimmy it against the cart.
When I heard this stuff, I was blown away.
Interesting choice of words, jimmy.
Dan. I mean, I love pineapples. I played out in Kanapali, Lanai, all those places way back in the day.
Yeah.
And I heard this guy told me that, and I said, you got to be kidding me.
Well, So you turn the pineapple upside down, and then you just sit in the aisle next to it, and you wait for somebody to come along? How does that work?
No, you pass the lady in the grocery store, and she gives you the wink-wink.
Oh, really?
Oh, you're into it.
So this is why people go to grocery stores in the suburbs.
Yeah, damn.
I know. I didn't understand it.
The funniest thing I've ever heard. Naperville, Western Springs, you heard about Naperville having a big one going on out there. They're probably into this FNO thing you were talking about.
Yeah.
But Western Springs has it, too, and they're all the rumors fly around like who's in it, and oh my, wow, nothing is sacred, Amy.
All right. Well, you kids, you ladies have fun. Me and Tony Schiappa are going to read our Bibles.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, Triple Threat. The mayor with the biggest tool in town issued a cri de coeur yesterday on Twitter to my friends in the LGBTQ plus community. How about IA, madam, community? Mm-hmm. The Supreme Court is coming for us next. This moment has to be a call to arms. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36 DA turnkey.pro. Text line, how do you respond to triple threats? Call to arms.
It's so crazy. I mean, these liberals, some that I unfortunately have to go to church with, actually think that next, besides, you know, once they take down Roe v. Wade, they're going to do what Mayor Lightfoot says, and then they're allegedly going to take away mixed racial marriages, that they're going to end that. And I said, do you know that Clarence Thomas's wife is white? I don't think they're going to be, you know, trying to end mixed race marriages. I'm not making this up. That's what.
Yeah, Eric Swalwell tweeted out they're going to come for interracial marriages next, or interracial relationships. So,
I'm just saying that they're so unhinged that.
Yeah.
They
so
think
what's the case? What's the case? They're going to. What's the case at bar?
Right,
what is the play for interracial marriage? I don't even understand what they're talking about.
I don't think that they understand what they're talking about. They just feel like every right in the world now is going to be taken away from them.
Yeah, no, I know. I mean, this is they're making the slippery slope argument. So all of their Marxist gains over the last 50 years will be undone, from Griswold to Johnson to Obergefell. Yeah, well, I understand. I understand they're concerned about that. They probably shouldn't be. They probably should be concerned from their perspective. Because those were particularly Obergefell, bad case law. Obergefell should be overturned, and conservatives should say as much, because the redefinition of marriage at the Supreme Court level was a horrific decision, much alike Roe, actually. So yeah, right. We disagreed with Anthony Kennedy's op-ed masquerading as a Supreme Court majority opinion in Obergefell. Was that not clear a decade ago? So why should we change our position? That's what we believed then. That's what we believe now. So I don't even understand the slippery slope argument. You want to talk about specific cases and specific issues where what was settled became unsettled. In 73, it was abortion. And a decade ago, it was marriage. So, yeah, we have disagreements about that. We think the Supreme Court wrongly decided those cases. Conservatives do. So? What is your point? And what is the call to arms? A call to do what? A call to screech outside Sam Alito's place? Okay.
Like they did last night. Was it Antifa that was there in front of his place?
Yeah, I mean, how do you distinguish between Antifa, the P-Hat Mafia, the pro-abort Planned Parenthood drones? I mean, how do you distinguish between? I have no idea. What's the call to arms?
Oh, she says that all the time.
Here's the call to arms, and here's what it's for. It's for her reelection bid. It's for the midterm elections for pro-abort Democrat socialists generally. But here's the call to arms. We pay for the stuff that she wants to do. She announced a Justice for All pledge and $500,000 that will go toward increasing access to abortion. The fund will support access to reproductive health care for Chicagoans and patients seeking abortions from neighboring states that could outlaw abortion or limit it if and when Dobbs overturns the Dobbs judgment, overturns Roe v. Wade and sends the issue back to the states. So now we're going to pay for people to come to Illinois to have an abortion.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. And then the verbiage, the words that she used to describe what Chicago is going to become, an oasis. I don't associate the word oasis with abortions, but she did. We're going to have an explosion of abortions at the oasis.
And we're expecting, frankly, an explosion of new cases from women in Wisconsin, Missouri, potentially Michigan, Indiana. I think the list is long, and Chicago is going to be an oasis in the Midwest, and we've got to be ready. So this is a start and not an ending, but it is absolutely a time for us to rally together and make sure that we're reunited and not turning back the clock on women's lives.
Yeah, Chicago already, and Illinois already, the abortion capital of the Midwest. So nothing changes. Oh, yeah, will you get more? Sure, if you're going to use other people's money to pay for it. People respond to incentives. All this money, you know, Willie Wilson does $50 of free gas, and so Lori Lightfoot uses other people's money to do the same thing.
Right.
She wants the people to have access to abortion, but then I got to pay for it.
And there's groups.
And
that
I got to pay for it for people outside the state of Illinois, because this is going to be. I tell you, yeah, come to Illinois. We'll pay for you to get your. It's like it's getting a few free chips. Pay for you to get your abortion. And then, you know,
go to the casino.
Yeah, well, head over and then get a joint and go to the casino so you can give it back. And that's the how we generate economic activity and tourism here.
Somebody texted, they're going to come here to kill their babies and we'll get shot coming out of the abortion clinic. A twofer.
Chris on the Dan Ryan
text line.
Yeah, Larry Lightfoot again and her idiotic sayings. Like you said, she's just looking for more votes, obviously, but I had a person that I work with that was stating that it's, you know, stealing constitutional rights from women. And I just happen to have a constitutional book on me. Yes, I'm a geek. And I gave it to that person. I said, please find this in the Constitution that says abortions are to be protected. He flipped through for a few seconds and threw it back at me and said, I think you're an idiot, and then walked away from me. So,
right.
And, you know, this is what we're dealing with. So that's how it is, man. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I know. I know. You're right. That's how it is.
And so it was a call to arms yesterday, too, for abortions.
This moment has to be a call to arms.
She loves that.
And I call upon all people of goodwill in this moment to make sure that you are investing in the organizations that are on the front lines.
In regards to providing abortions.
Well, obviously. Well,
there's certain groups that came forward yesterday. Like, if you need help, we'll pay your gas money to go from Kentucky to
Illinois. You have companies. You have Amazon and Apple that will pay travel expenses up to like $4,000 for you to be an abortion tourist. You have all these big companies, these Marxist corporations that hate the capitalism they practice and certainly hate the American culture that has allowed them to find such success. They hate it. And they'll underwrite it. They'll underwrite the destruction of the nuclear family. They'll underwrite the sort of irresponsibility that's associated with this, the violence.
There's like giddy about it. I mean, here's the Planned Parenthood president of Illinois.
Planned Parenthood of Illinois is preparing to see double to five times the number of patients that we currently see for abortion care.
Yeah, I know.
It's a business.
Because there's abortion on demand paid for by other people here, and that's not the case in our neighbors. Yeah, I know. Right. We get it. We understand why. So what? So what do you want us to do about it? Oh, you want us to pay for it. Got it. Jesse and Hammond, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, hi, Dan and Amy. Good morning. I live in Hammond, Indiana, and our governor and all the governors that surround Illinois who don't agree with this abortion, they should pass laws that say, look, if you're an Indiana citizen, Ohio, Wisconsin, Iowa citizen, and you go over the border, you go get an abortion, and you have government insurance or you have regular private insurance, if you go get an abortion, we find out your insurance is cut off. That's it. Completely gone. You're on your own. And I think that should.
Well,
they should do that. The government should pass a law like that.
Well, no. Well, I mean,
we have this freedom of movement thing.
Well, you also have, you don't need to have insurance coverage for it. You don't need to use your insurance because you come to Chicago and Chicagoans are going to pay for it for you.
If there has to be a paper trail, you know what I'm saying? I mean, insurances will find out.
Thanks for the call, Jesse. Yeah, I mean, the whole thing is this isn't about being punitive to women, which is what the pro-aborts have always tried to brand the pro-life movement as, being punitive to women. It's not. It's a barbaric practice. It's a terrible thing. You're going to, most of the women who get abortions, you're going to regret it. That's just the data. You're going to suffer ill effects. Some will paper over their regret, their remorse, by celebrating it, by leaning into it, by wearing a pea hat, by screeching outside Samuel Alito's house to try to cover the wound. Okay. All right. It's just a horrific practice. And it's a degradation of our culture. And it's an affront to the gift that is life. That's all. If you think it's so disposable, okay. By the way, since we're having this conversation now, I'm so glad we are, because it's forcing people who are very uncomfortable with this conversation into having it, including a lot of phony pro-life politicians. So I love this, because I'll talk about this all day. When does life begin? Rick Scott has a good op-ed in the Journal. Simple question. Simple question to ask Democrats, these pro-abort Democrats screeching around Chicago, stomping their feet, issuing calls to arms. When does life begin? Why don't you ask Triple Threat that at her next presser?
Okay.
I know. I mean, I should probably give you the Justice KBJ. I'm not a biologist. No, you're a policymaker. You have to make policy in topic areas that you're not a expert in. This is why you rely on experts. You look at the scholarship. You read about it. You think about it. You debate it. So what's your understanding of when life begins? Because, again, in Illinois, you have abortion on demand all 9 months, paid for by taxpayers, thanks to Republicans and Democrats alike.
All 9 months?
And so life doesn't begin, according to you, in Illinois, support these policies, even when the baby can exist outside of the womb. I mean, forget even, you know, places like France, right, that ban abortions after 14 weeks and the supermajority of support of Americans for bans after 15 weeks and the heartbeat laws that have been passed in half the country. Forget all that. Just tell me, when does life begin? And if you don't know, well, this is so important to you. You haven't thought about this at all? You haven't wondered? I thought you're an intellectually curious person. I thought you're super informed. That's why you're such an activist. That's why you're so passionate about this issue, because you know so much. So tell me. I just put that question to people. I think Rick Scott this is not new, but it's a reminder. Just put the question to people.
Right.
I understand your position, and you're very rabid about it. I got it. So tell me this. I want to learn from you. I want to understand your view. So, like our friend Chris on the Dan Ryan, this is a constitutional right? Okay, well then, explain. Don't just tell me that. I don't know anything. You're the enlightened one. So educate me.
All right. And the does have an adopted daughter.
The floor is yours.
Yeah. They adopted together.
Nation and Aurora.
Hi. How are you? So life begins with life. You know, you have them swimmers. Anyway, but
yes. Thank you for the birds and the bees talk, Nation.
Right.
Yes.
But anyway, paying for it. Why aren't these men paying for it? If Dr. Laura said, well, you want to call me up and complain, you should be getting $250 a pop. Anyway, and men should be getting tested. They don't tell you about, as you know, was reported during COVID, of the high rate of STDs and, you know, the serious, you know, STD. And, it baffles me that women want to their lives respected. You know, that's why so many of them are found in a ditch and the most violent place. It's not in the streets of Chicago. It's in the womb.
All right. Thanks for the call, Nation. Roy, Glen Ellen.
Yes, just wondering what time the joint press conference with Cardinal Kupich and Bishop Hicks will be.
Yeah, right.
This morning.
Yeah.
Don't hold your breath.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call, Ryan.
Yeah, where is he? Why is he radio silent on this?
Well, I mean, he doesn't want to offend his good buddy, Jelly Belly Pritzker.
Oh,
you read those
right.
Emails that were, those text messages that were released?
Oh, yeah.
A couple months ago?
They're in love.
Yeah, he said, the only one who has more profound, deep-seated feelings for Pritzker and his handling of COVID than Cardinal Supich is the mayor of Aurora, Richard Irvin.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
The establishment Republicans candidate for governor. And wait till you hear what he had to say about abortion at his press conference yesterday. Because
that wasn't a press conference. That was a hot mess.
Because some Republicans, including those who consider themselves pro-life, are going to get snookered again. We'll see. Tom, Deer Park.
Yeah, Dan and Amy, question. Every time I go past that Planned Parenthood clinic downtown, very prominent site.
Wells and Division.
I can't help.
Yeah.
Or,
can't help but.
Is there one downtown?
Division in like Dearborn, right? Yeah. But right, yeah, right there. Yeah. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
And it's so prominent to visitors of this. Clark. And so I am positive that the culture is going to change on this in a short period of time. And I just can't help but wonder 25, 50 years to the future, what will they put on that site and how will it be treated? In other words, you look at some Civil War battle sites and look what the traitors did because they defended the institution of slavery. I can't help but wonder if Mayor Lightfoot and Governor Pritzker will be on some sort of plaque for helping to perpetrate this, and that'll be a memorial park. I'm just curious about your thoughts.
Mm, thanks for the call, Tom. Well, I mean, you know, who knows how history will treat the leading pro-aborts of the last 50 years. Hopefully they'll be treated as criminals. Hopefully they'll be held in disrepute throughout the annals of history. Not currently, although among half the population. But hopefully there'll be a return. Maybe there will be. I mean, certainly if and when Dobbs overturns Roe and sends this back to the states, you're going to have two very different courses being charted by 50% by a country that's split in half on the issue. John Crown Point.
Hi, Dan and Amy. Love your guys' show. Hey, I'm just curious. I watched the local news, and that Father Flager, I think his name is, that mm-hmm. crazy guy,
mm-hmm.
I wonder if he has any opinion on this.
Yeah. Well, that's a good question. Thanks for the call, John. Yeah, it's funny. It's tough to get much out of the Flagers and the Supages and the Hickses and all of those Catholic leaders that have so much to say about minimum wage, climate change,
abortion.
No, they don't. So much to say about these other topics that have nothing to do with the faith, not directly. And when it comes time to be held to account, when it comes time for them to lead, yeah, I mean, I know Supich shows up at the March for Life rallies once a year, pro forma. It's like a politician who puts pro-life as a bullet point on their campaign mailers. It doesn't mean anything to them, and that comes across. It's a low priority. It makes them uncomfortable. It's not that important. Why? Because it offends their Marxist friends.
I still shake my head about Governor Pritzker for 2 years. Oh, if it saves one life. And now he's like, now we're going to have 30,000 more abortions here in Illinois. And they gleefully talk about it as it's something to be celebrated.
It's money.
These are sick people.
Hey, the abortion mills. Casinos. You got your abortion mills. You got your casinos.
Right.
You got your...
swinger parties in Burr Ridge.
You got your swinger parties in Burr Ridge. You got your dope peddlers. What else you got? You got your payday loans.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's how you build a vibrant economy, a free and robust and growing, attractive society. It's a wonderful job they're doing. That's why 85% of the people think Illinois is on the wrong track. More, please. Brian Westside. Brian.
Hello?
Yep. Go ahead, Brian.
Yes. Hey, good morning, guys. Hey, so for the past, I don't know, 2-3 years, we've been told the police, you know, are systematically racist. Well, here we have a pretty good example of Planned Parenthood being founded by Margaret Sanger. Can't pronounce her name right.
Yeah,
who actually
right.
was a eugenicist and can be argued as a racist.
She was a racist. There's no argument.
Right.
Yeah.
So we can argue that Planned Parenthood, and therefore abortions, we can play by their game, is systematically racist.
Thanks. All right, guys. Thanks for the call, Brian. Text from the Amish texter about triple threats, call to arms.
Yeah.
I think Mayor Tripod threat meant this as a call to Planned Parenthood to sell arms.
Oh.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. What kind of Republican supports Black Lives Matter? That's the question I pose in my new television spot and radio spot that you've heard this morning already on behalf of the PAC that I'm running. What kind of Republican supports Black Lives Matter?
What kind of Republican says he supports Black Lives Matter strongly and passionately? The kind of Republican who voted Democrat in 7 of the last 8 primaries. The kind of Republican who says this about J.B. Pritzker.
It is my honor to bring to the podium a great friend, a great leader who has guided our state with professionalism and compassion.
You know what you call Richard Irvin? You call him a Democrat. In the Republican primary, vote for, you know, a Republican. Vote no on Democrat Richard Irvin.
What kind of, what do you call somebody who votes for Richard Irvin? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. We know what Richard Irvin is. What are his supporters?
Because for the first time since he announced 4 months ago, he had a Chicago area news conference yesterday launching his campaign, but it took that long to officially come out there with his running mate and a few others.
Yeah, he...
And it didn't go well. That wasn't a press conference. That was it was very defensive posturing by him, the way he was standing too in his words. It was not... didn't go well.
There are things that he wanted to talk about and things that he doesn't want to talk about. And, of course, you try to avoid the things you don't want to talk about. But you, the skilled politician will do it in such a way that it's not so obvious what the answer is. Because then essentially you're talking about, and that's all anybody's going to talk about. So here's an example. And by the way, he had an opportunity to practice over the weekend when Craig Wall ambushed him in Aurora. ABC News' Craig Wall ambushed him in Aurora at a restaurant opening. He's asked the same question again about Dobbs, the pending Supreme Court case, and he offers this.
Still think, but hold on.
What we do in Illinois, you know, I'm running for governor of the state of Illinois. I'm not talking about what the federal government's going to do.
Yeah, that's not really...
That's not a polished answer. That's not an answer.
It's not really compelling. You know, I'm staying in my lane. Yeah, well, here's the thing, Rich, officer of the court, mayor of Aurora. I don't know how to tell you this, but if Dobbs overturns Roe, as that leaked draft opinion seems to indicate, then it is returned to the states, you know, where governors and legislators have to hash out the regulatory policy as it pertains to abortion. So it is about to be, I mean, it's always been a state issue as per the repeal of parental notification under this governor. And it will be even more of a state issue if Roe v. Wade is overturned, because there'll be no federal overlay on the topic, will there, Rich? So you want to revise and extend your remarks thinking about yourself as a governor? Of course he doesn't. And then, as Craig Wall reported, he went on to repeat that he's pro-life with rape, incest, and health of the mother exceptions. Anybody who's been involved in the pro-life movement, who's paid attention to this issue over the last 50 years, will know what the health of the mother exception is when it is uttered by a politician. It is saying...
What?
I'm pro-choice. Health of the mother, not life of the mother, health of the mother. It is the weasel word of the pro-abort. So if you're pro-life, if that's something important to you, and if you realize that it's not, even if it's not the issue that informs your vote, the primary issue that informs your vote, you know, as a Republican, because you've seen this play out over time again and again, that the reason that conservatives ask Republican candidates what their position is on life and the Second Amendment, regardless of the office you're running for, is because if you're right on those issues, there is a high likelihood you are going to be right on the rest of the issues, including the economic ones. And if you're wrong on those issues, then it says you have no foundation and you will be pushed around on those issues and every other issue. That's how it has actually played out. And we have enough decades under our belt now to watch this play out. And some Republican primary voters are sophisticated enough to pick up on this, and some are not. And those who are not, they're called Richard Irvin voters, unless they're just are straight up pay-to-play Republicans who are interested in having their guy in so they can get a little bit bigger cut of the spoils than they're able to get from Jelly Belly as a combined Republican.
312-642-5600. Turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick
In my
comment.
Ad, I mention his, you know, Richard Irvin in his own words on Obama. Richard Irvin in his own words on Pritzker. Richard Irvin in his own words on Black Lives Matter. Here's Richard Irvin in his own words on Trump.
Did you vote for President Trump, and would you support President Trump if you ran again?
Listen, that's exactly what J.B. Pritzker wants. That's exactly what J.B. Pritzker wants, Oliver to be talking about. He wants to be talking about anything other than his failures and his record.
You know, I would say that takes a lot of stones to make that statement, but it's not stones, it's shamelessness. Here's a guy who's spending tens of millions of dollars of Ken Griffin's money to smear, particularly Darren Bailey, as some sort of Biden supporter. And when he's asked whether or not he supported Trump in 2020, which he didn't, that's exactly what J.B. Pritzker wants us to be talking about. Don't get distracted by focusing on who supported whom in previous presidential elections. His entire campaign against Bailey and, to a lesser extent, Jesse Sullivan is on that topic. How obtuse do you have to be to not pick up on the scam that is being run here?
He's a flim-flam man.
He is.
I mean, if you watch him at a party, too, he's so uncomfortable in his own skin. Not at a party, but in a Republican event. When he walked in, you knew he wanted to get out of there as soon as humanly possible. Because people are asking questions like, you know, why are you supporting BLM? Do you still support BLM? And his answer back then, 2 weeks ago, was, well, I had to, because if I didn't, then they'd burn down my town. They already burned down your town, sir.
Do we have... Is the Republican Party in the state unable to get its fill of embarrassment?
Somebody's got to be getting paid off. I mean, there's money involved.
This is not just an unqualified candidate for governor, but he is also that. This is an embarrassment. This is not even close. Not even close. And remember, I mean, you've heard his answers there on those two topics yesterday. In February, there's no improvement here, and there's none coming. This is his interview with Mike Flannery, Fox Chicago, from February on taxes and spending. It's not just abortion. It's not just COVID. We could get to that. It's not just crime. We can get to crime, or we can get to any of these topics. Taxes and spending, February, Richard Irvin, Mike Flannery.
He declined to rule out raising taxes or fees himself, but said he would propose some permanent tax cuts.
He declined to commit to not raising taxes. Ooh. Now he's got a commercial out where he's got hedge clippers. He's cutting taxes.
Oh, yeah.
Why? Because it doesn't matter what I said yesterday, and I don't remember, because I'm an empty shell. And you think this is the way back for the Republican Party and, by extension, the state of Illinois? Who can watch this and honestly come to that conclusion? I want to hear a case to be made. I know Richard Irvin is too much of a coward to come on the show, and he's ill-equipped for it, as we saw from his performances in this campaign, including yesterday.
You would eat him alive
No one? I see a list of state legislators. I see a list of, you know, Republican Party apparatchiks that have endorsed Richard Irvin. Nobody has the guts to make a case publicly for this guy?
Well, they always text me, too, and say, oh, yeah, well, you know, we should come on and talk about it. I'm like, well, come on. And every time we talk, I text them saying, now's your time to call in and tell us why you're supporting Richard Irvin.
He has the best chance to win. That's just a talking point that you say. You don't know. Nobody has any numbers to support that. And by the way, there are not numbers to support that.
I know. It's all smoke and mirrors.
So what's
part of their marketing? he's leading right now in the polls. What polls?
We say that the left just, you know, waves a flag, takes positions, shouts people down, doesn't make any arguments, doesn't present any evidence, is full of disinformation. And then at least in Illinois, we threaten the Republican Party with Richard Irvin. Boy, oh boy, another telling moment is just 6 weeks away for the Republican Party and for Illinois. Another chance, more chances than we deserve to get it right. We'll see.
6 weeks away.
Ralph and Rantoul.
All right.
Hey, good morning. I know the polite thing that most media, radio, whatever people say is, you know, the voters are too smart, or candidates. The voters are so smart, you know, they can't get fooled. You know, they're not that smart. In large, they've proven themselves to be gullible and stupid. You know, like those glasses that I think it was Rowdy Piper or whatever put on in the movie They Live, where you could see all the lizard people walking around. If only the politicians could be somehow programmed that when they're about ready to lie, we have a catchphrase we use in our family when we're doing an obvious subject change. Somebody will go like, hey, how about them Cubs? You know, and there's an awkward thing.
Right. Right.
If only at that point, you know, when they're about ready to lie like Irvin, I guess all he would stand there and say is, how about them Cubs? That's what his press conference would be.
Thanks for the
that
call,
press
Ralph.
Conference, and I've been to many press conferences. That was hard to watch.
Mark in Plainfield. Is that Mark Batnick? State Rep Mark Batnick? He's supporting Richard Irvin. Let's hear
Mark?
From Mark Batnick. Is that you? You live in Plainfield?
No, this is Mark, the CPA from Plainfield. I'm sorry to disappoint you, Dan. And, you know, the reason why people think Irvin is some kind of shoo-in is because of the color of his skin. If he was white, he probably wouldn't even be running. And that's why I call him the Black Rauner.
Yeah. Thanks, Mark. Well, so we think we're going to out-identitarian politics the left. Is that what you think? Is that the argument? Okay. I mean, that's a position. I'd love to hear an explanation in support of that position. Phil and Darian.
Hey, good morning, guys. Listen, it's pretty obvious that Irvin is a rhino. 100% Democrat running as a Republican. 100%. Just like his commercials, he says all lives matter. And just like your previous caller, the color of his skin, could you imagine if any of the other candidates, white candidates, said all lives matter? It would be up in arms, alt-right, just burning their houses down to the ground. What's your take, Dan?
Yeah, thanks for the call, Phil. I mean, it's an obvious way for him to cover his own words. I support Black Lives Matter strongly and passionately. And by the way, that's not just about Black Lives Matter. Like, being pro-life is not just about being pro-life. It's an indicator. It tells you about foundation. That's why these issues are important. These cultural touchstones are important. Well, how does this guy think about the world? And what informs the attitude he's going to bring to whatever issue will come his way as a governor? And this should be, you know, this, the same thinking and the same discussion applies to any candidate for any office. And what you're seeing is what? Tell me something that I'm missing. Again, I've thrown myself out. Anybody from anywhere, make a case. Point something out that we haven't covered, that we're missing. Tell me how we're wrong in how we're describing what is transpiring. Can't get it. Mike in Oak Forest.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Good.
How you doing, Dan Namy? I'm just calling in because to tell you exactly why he'll never win Irving. Basically, because he's a minority, and minorities are the only ones allowed to have opinions right now. And the Democrats, they stand a way better chance of getting all their malarkey pushed through when they have a white guy in office, because a white guy is hostage to everything they want to do. And if you express any kind of opinion to deviate from the Democratic agenda, they'll cancel you. So you have all these white politicians who get on their pulpit and scream louder than even the minorities or the ladies for their rights, because they know if they don't do that, they'll lose power.
All right, Mike. Chuck and Delavan.
Hey, a lot can be said about this Black Lives Matter thing. You know, whoever hands out the T-shirts to them should pay a lot more attention to who is wearing them, because if you watch our riots up here with the Jacob Blake, you just talk about Jacob Blake. Our governor and the president of the United States couldn't wait to fly in to go see Jacob Blake, mom and dad, and say, hey, I'm sorry for what happened, and now we're finding out what happened. But it wasn't the people that was in Kenosha that were Black Lives Matter people. They didn't burn down Kenosha. That was the city of Chicago driving that train all the way up to Kenosha and burning that city to the ground. Mm-hmm. So we got the same thing. So this guy here that's running, he's a scumbag. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call,
Chuck.
People
came from 17 different states.
And by the way,
were arrested.
By the way, just as a reminder, I support Black Lives Matter strongly and passionately. That was in March of 2021.
Yeah, well, this was all happening.
Well, after the summer of 2020, when they laid waste to cities across America.
Countless cities. Billions of dollars worth of damage.
Drago on Lakeshore Drive.
Drago.
I must break you.
No, I'm here. All right. The bigger question here is, what kind of pictures does he have of Griffin or what's in it for him?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, can you...
Thanks for the
That's
call.
That's a good question, and you would know this answer. Can he run as, you know, he's mayor of Aurora, so he's getting that salary. Running as a candidate, could Ken Griffin pay him to run? Or can he benefit? I mean,
you can take a salary as a candidate. It has to be reported. I don't think he's doing that. I don't know. I mean, it would have to be disclosed on his campaign finance reports. I don't think he's doing that.
Okay.
But, you know, what's in it for Ken Griffin? I don't know. I don't know the mind of Ken Griffin. I know some of the political operatives around Ken Griffin, and I can tell you what's in it for them. And what's in it for them is they want a stooge. They want a stooge that they can make money with, so many of them. One, that's part of it. Part of it is they don't like social cultural conservatives. They don't believe social cultural conservatives can win. And so they go with somebody who's going to say things like, I'm pro-life with all the exceptions to being pro-life. Because they know that he won't make any cases on cultural issues. He'll go along with the zeitgeist. By the way, that's one of the reasons that he cannot win and would not win if he was the nominee. And so it's an uphill climb, as I've said, since the beginning. It's gotten a little bit better because the year has gotten a lot better because of what has happened under this president. But it is still an incline. Pritzker is not nearly as vulnerable as Republicans wish he was. So you better present a contrast. If you're going to take your shot, then take it with somebody who is going to throw punches, not pantomime the other side. That's the chance to upend expectations. That's the chance to reshuffle the landscape. That's what President Trump proved in the 2016 primary and general, didn't he? You know, the guy that Richard Irvin doesn't want to talk about.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer. America First with Sebastian Gorka. Today at 3, right before Sean Thompson at 4 on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. The FDA recently promulgated proposed rules to permanently ban the sale of menthol cigarettes. There's a push to ban menthol cigarettes as well as flavored cigars. And
I just keep asking why.
Flavored vapes, too, I think. Why is this so mission critical? Why the focus here? Well, we're supposed to talk to Dr. Julie Morita. She's a late scratch. Instead, we're going to talk to Matt Pierce, Senior Program Officer with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, one of the largest health philanthropic health-focused philanthropic institutions in the country. Matt Pierce, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
So why? Why is this important to ban menthol cigarettes and flavored cigars?
Well, it's important because cigarettes continue to be the number one cause of preventable death in the United States. And menthol cigarettes are the number one cause of preventable death among Black Americans who smoke menthol cigarettes at a disproportionately high rate.
So why not ban all cigarettes?
This is really an opportunity.
Why not ban cigarettes then? Across the board.
Well, the most important in our society, what we want to do is we want to make sure that we are preventing the sale of particularly dangerous products. Now, all cigarettes are dangerous, but flavored cigarettes and flavored tobacco products are particularly dangerous, and they're particularly dangerous to kids. Menthol makes it easier to start smoking, and it makes it harder to quit smoking. So we've banned the sale and manufacture of all flavored cigarettes except for menthol. So what the FDA is proposing to do now is closing a loophole.
What kind of research? I mean, these are just blanket statements, or do you have anything backing that up, that menthol cigarettes, or kids get hooked on menthol cigarettes first and then go on to other cigarettes, or what are you saying?
Yeah, so there's a lot of research. So I think we can start back in 2011. The FDA's Tobacco Product Scientific Advisory Committee looked at menthol in particular and found that banning the sale and manufacture of menthol cigarettes would be beneficial to the public's health. And in 2013, the FDA itself found that menthol cigarettes pose a public health harm above and beyond non-menthol flavored cigarettes. And since then, the evidence has only accumulated. We also know that kids in particular are attracted to flavors. So
kids in particular are attracted to cigarettes, and so the ban on Joe Camel and all this other stuff. But we're still keeping cigarettes legal. Children can't buy them, so then it becomes a parental oversight issue in addition to a retail oversight issue, I suppose. So we're just talking about adults who can legally purchase these products and are to be treated as rational citizens responsible for themselves. Why the focus? I mean, this is from your press release. Studies show 85% of African-American smokers use menthol cigarettes. Menthol cigarettes affect other specific populations, including women, the LGBTQ plus community, people with low levels of income and education. Uh-huh. So you can't reason with adult Black Americans? You can't persuade the LGBTQ plus community? These are not reasonable people. They're not intelligent enough to understand what's in their best interest health-wise. There needs to be a ban?
No, that's not at all the point. The point is that the industry shouldn't be allowed to make their products more dangerous and deadly. Menthol makes tobacco easier to inhale. So people inhale more deeply, they get bigger doses of nicotine, and they develop stronger addictions. It's also important to remember, even if tobacco companies aren't allowed to market directly to kids, there are still ways in which they reach kids. So,
well, I understand. That's where adults have to intervene. I understand.
Yeah, so most people who smoke start when they are young.
Yeah.
And so
I understand that, too.
So what we're trying to do is prevent initiation and prevent addiction.
What I don't understand.
And also to prevent the sale of, to prevent the sale of kind of a particularly dangerous form of cigarette.
You know, I understand that. So if I understand that, why can't every other adult understand that? I understand that menthol cigarettes masks the, it cools, so it masks the negative impact of cigarette smoking. I understand that. So that's why I don't smoke menthol cigarettes or cigarettes generally. I understand it's not a good product. It's not to my advantage health-wise. So if you can persuade me, if I can, you know, live in America and understand this from all of the information that's out there, then why can't somebody who is my age on the south or west side of Chicago, why can't he or she understand the same thing? Why the ban? Why can't you? You didn't answer my question. Why are certain communities unpersuadable so much so that you need to ban the product from their access?
No, I don't. I just don't think it's a question of saying that certain communities are unpersuadable.
Well, that's what you're saying.
It's that menthol cigarettes. No, I'm saying that menthol cigarettes in particular, all cigarettes are addictive, and menthol cigarettes are particularly addictive.
I know.
But you guys think that people are just going to quit smoking?
I'm not a proponent of smoking, but I don't need it banned for me not to do it. So, again, if I can be persuaded, why can't everybody else be persuaded? Why are these communities, why do these communities specifically have to be protected from themselves?
Well, they're not being protected by themselves.
From themselves, from being protected from themselves.
What the FDA is doing is closing a loophole. We banned all other flavored cigarettes years ago, and we allowed the continued sale of one flavor. It's the flavor that has been disproportionately marketed to Black Americans, and that is disproportionately
why did that happen?
By Black Americans.
Why was that accepted?
Disproportionately kills Black Americans.
So why was that exempted? Why was that exempted? Do you think?
That's a great question. I think the tobacco industry has spent millions of dollars promoting menthol cigarettes, and they didn't want to lose their market. So there's been a lot invested to keep this. To keep these products on the market, and it's great to see that the FDA is finally acting to ban the sale of this last remaining cigarette flavor.
Mm-hmm. But what have you done a study on, you know, what percentage of people that smoke menthol cigarettes are now just going to jump over to smoking regular cigarettes? I mean, do you think you're going to stop people from smoking?
So there's some evidence on that, and some people... from Canada in particular, my understanding is that they expect within what the one estimate I'm aware of based on the Canadian data is that within about 18 months, they expect 1 million people. We can expect about 1 million people to stop smoking and about almost 250,000 of African Americans to stop smoking.
Mm-hmm. And so where do we go from here with other products that are deleterious to people's health, particularly and disproportionately products that are linked to diabetes, which disproportionately affects the Black community, for example. What's next on the hit list to ban in order to protect this community from itself? What's next?
I don't really know. I mean, first of all, I work specifically on tobacco, but I would also say that tobacco is unique. It is the number one cause. Cigarettes are the number one cause of preventable death mm-hmm. among all Americans mm-hmm. and among African Americans. So there is no other product that if used the way it's intended, kills half of all users. So it's a unique situation and really not comparable to other products.
Well, I mean, if we're in the business of saving lives, I just figure we might as well work down the punch list, go from worst to least. I guess you've got to jump. Matt Pierce, Senior Program Officer of the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation on banning menthol cigarettes. Matt Pierce, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy take a call on our last interview on menthol cigarettes with Lee from Hammond. Lee.
Yeah, Dan, I would have loved it, as long as we were going to play Nanny State, if you brought up high fructose corn syrup and sugar to this guy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's buku evidence that this would lead directly to heart disease, cancers, and you know, you go in a restaurant, that sugar container sitting there, you know, you could dump four or five sugars in your coffee or whatever. Nobody's on you about that. You know, it's easy to pick on the tobacco industry. It gets you brownie points when you want to get out votes and that kind of thing. And you almost had it. I mean, you had the guy right there, but he didn't have an answer for you. I would have loved if you would have just brought that up.
Thanks for the call, Lee. Well, that's what sort of referencing with diabetes. You could go to trans fat as well. But here's the other thing too, and this is the big lie of the left. We see this play out in Illinois all the time at the state as well as local level. Cigarettes are bad. Oh, menthol cigarettes are bad. Okay, we'll ban them.
Yeah.
No, we don't want to ban them because we tax them and we raise taxes on them.
And there's a sin tax on it.
Exactly.
On top of a county tax and a city tax and a state tax. And we can't live without it.
We've already budgeted for and spent that money.
Oh.
So we need you to continue smoking. This is the whole point. Government against the interests of its constituents. Don't smoke. Don't smoke. Smoking bad. Smoke. Gotta smoke. Please smoke. We need that cash.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, per Mike Scott's newscast, talking about roads.
Oh, yeah.
I got to tell you, I think the roads in the city are the worst I've ever seen them. And it's fascinating because all this, we had this huge infrastructure, you know, $30-40 billion infrastructure deal at the state level, all the COVID money that flowed to the states and localities, big cities like Chicago, mm-hmm. And the roads are
atrocious.
Disintegrating.
Well, it's like a Costa Rican highway, seriously. And you have to dodge in and out. And if you're on the inbound Kennedy near Addison, you best not be in the right-hand lane because you're going to pop a tire.
Well, not the expressways, but also the roads, the main drags in the city. On Upper Wacker, there is a pothole by the Hyatt that a small family could live in. I mean, it's... And then the the ramp down to Lower Wacker.
Oh, is literally like you're shaking.
It's like a ski hill with moguls, except they're indented.
It's a double black diamond, is what it is.
A buddy of mine sent me this meme driving sober versus driving drunk in America. You know, driving sober is you're driving in a straight line, and driving drunk is you're weaving around. In Chicago, driving sober is you're weaving around because you're weaving around the potholes. Driving drunk is just plowing right through the potholes. So if you see anybody driving straight on Chicago roads,
they're hammered.
Call the police. They're drunk.
Yeah.
If you're not slaloming, then you're not driving sober in Chicago. Unbelievable.
I don't know where that comes on the priority list, but they got to get it done. Why are we paying taxes? I always say that, like, why are we paying taxes? I have no police protection. The roads are in shambles. Schools stink.
Well, I don't know. There's nothing that our next guest can do about it except encourage people to move over to the other side of the Cheddar Curtain into his district. Brian Stile is the Republican congressman for Wisconsin's first. He joins us now. Brian, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Dan and Amy, thanks for having me on. I got a new appreciation and understanding of Illinois drivers now.
Yeah, exactly.
Bad driving.
Exactly.
Maybe that's what's always been going on.
And, you know, and tell the state troopers in Wisconsin, look, if you see Illinois, I know you guys are always looking to feast on Illinois drivers. If you see an Illinois driver that's still weaving as he gets into the corporate boundaries of Wisconsin, just understand he's decompressing from driving in Illinois. So just give that driver a little bit of bandwidth, okay?
Yeah, I'll tell my law enforcement friends to have a little bit of sympathy for those south of the border.
Thank you very much. We appreciate that. All right. You've recently taken up the issue of the national debt. I don't know why. Nobody seems to care. Obviously, increasing interest rates means increasing debt payments. But tell us that in a Republican-led House and Senate that there's going to be a serious approach to paying down the debt, or even just at minimum, not piling on more debt?
As we look at this inflationary period that we've entered, there's so many sleeping problems that are starting to rear their ugly heads. One of them, interest on the debt. You know, we're sitting out there with $30 trillion in debt. So if you think about $30 trillion, you had a $30,000 car loan and your interest rate moves 1%, that's $300 a year in interest. If you have a $30 trillion car loan like the federal government has, a 1% move is $300 billion. And so every time that we're watching the Fed move the interest rate up, we're squeezing the federal government's budget harder and harder because we have to make these interest payments. Nobody's talking about it. And I think it's all the more reason, one, we got to get interest under, or we got to get inflation under control. And then two, we got to get really serious about the federal government's debt because we are going to get clobbered as this inflationary period continues.
Yeah, I mean, also, but you know, the flip side is you're sort of inflating your way out with cheaper dollars. But I digress. You know, the larger conversation about debt, you know, necessarily includes entitlements and unfunded liabilities associated with entitlements. Your predecessor, Paul Ryan, had a bit of a dalliance with entitlement reform during part of his tenure, and that subsided. Do you think, a Republican-controlled Congress, I mean, is there anybody that really has the appetite to go after where the spending really is at the federal level?
For far too long, we've been lacking courage in Washington, D.C., where Republicans, I think, are unified in the need and the recognition that our entitlement programs are driving this massive amount of spending, and we need to dramatically improve the efficiency in how we deliver those products, in particular Medicare, meaning delivering it more efficient so you keep the quality up, but you can bring the cost down. What we also need to see is a president running in 2024 who's willing to work alongside a Republican Congress. So I believe we're going to get there this year to retake the House, but I don't foresee President Biden being willing to help us and actually addressing this gorilla in the room. It's going to take us to get past 2024 and tell the American people that we got to make tough choices. I think ultimately voters reward people who have the courage to make tough choices. We just haven't seen enough politicians running with a little bit of backbone.
Well, was that a priority, though, at all for President Trump when he was in office for 4 years?
We haven't seen really anybody want to talk about it writ large at the national level, really, since all the way back in the year 2000. When there were attempts to make reforms into the entitlement programs following 9/11, nothing in that regard moved.
Yeah.
So I'd love to see us have that national debate. And that's part of the reason I'm trying to raise the attention on this, is so that we do have that national debate as we head into the 2024 cycle.
Yeah. And instead, what did we get? We got Medicare Part D. We got an expansion of Medicare after the discussion about entitlement reform. Part of this is doing what you're doing, right? Raising the issue and saying that, you know, tackle it, and then being specific. And that includes things like what Rick Scott did on the Senate side, which is promulgating a plan. Here are 4 dozen things that we would do in the range of topics that the federal government has influence over if we were in charge. And, you know, putting policy ideas out there to be kicked around and also to be used against you as best they can by Democrats. But you have to make arguments. You can't just wave the flag.
Absolutely. On the House side, with Kevin McCarthy, we're doing just that. We've built out a series of task forces. I'm on the leadership team on jobs and the economy. We're looking to come forward to the American people here this summer and lay out, if you elect Republicans in the House of Representatives, we take away the Speaker's gavel from Nancy Pelosi, here's what we're going to do. Because like you, Dan, I'm of the firm belief that we can't run just on they're terrible, they are. But we also need to run on here's what we're going to do if given the opportunity to be in charge. And then we actually have to deliver on that such that we can be rewarded by the voters to be able to continue the reforms that are needed to get our country back on the right track.
What about repealing Obamacare in toto? Is that still something that's kicked around, or has the Republican Party surrendered on it?
I think fewer and fewer people discuss a full repeal of Obamacare. I think where we're looking now is, can we make the substantive reforms in how we deliver the healthcare product? I think what we need to do is be focused in on, here's what we can do on the reform side. I think where the Republicans miss is that they talked about repealing Obamacare, but they never did the hard work of saying, here's what we're for. What I'm looking forward to this summer is coming back and saying, here's what we're for. Here's how we can actually drive down the cost of healthcare, drive up the quality of healthcare, so the American people look and say, that is the option that we want to drive towards.
But, you know, one of the things, and, you know, you're young and plucky enough to perhaps do it. One of the things is to challenge the premises of the left rather than starting from them. And too often Republicans, oh, it's a government program. We can't, and then the left knows this. Once we get it passed, they'll never take it away. So we can't take it away. We're just going to try to set it up so the central planned nature of this particular entitlement or this particular program is as inoffensive as possible, as is the least inefficient it can be. But nobody challenges the premise. Number one, is this something the federal government should be in? And number two, if it's an area we should be in, should it be centrally planned? Should we set up a new agency, a new bureaucracy? Should we be governing it? Or should it be decentralized with resources in the hands of individuals to make their own spending decisions, connecting consumer to provider in things in areas like healthcare? I mean, challenging the premises, because everything is centrally planning, and the Republican proposition is we're going to do a little bit better, a little bit more efficiently, but you're still advancing the vision of the left just more slowly than they would.
Well, in particular, as we look at what the Democrats were doing in Build Back Better, with the vast amount of new government programs that dramatically alter people's relationships with the federal government, on the Select Committee on the Economy, I'm the lead Republican on that. We dove in and said, okay, it's one, like you said, to say, you know, these are socialist policies. There's another to actually defeat them on the merits. We took on pretty aggressively the child care proposals that the Democrats put forward. Child care costs, huge issue for countless families in America. But the proposal put forward by the Democrats would have actually increased the cost for average families. It would have been free for lower income families, but it would have actually driven up the cost for average working families. It would have put the control in Washington, D.C. It would have clobbered faith-based providers. And we took them on in the merits. I'll tell you, we did a hearing on this. We were so successful the next day, Nancy Pelosi came in with the Democrats on our committee and held a press conference to try to clean up the mess that they created trying to defend against our arguments. I think you're right. The right needs to go in, argue on the merits, defeat the underlying argument, because otherwise the Democrats will continue to march down this path until they get full socialization of a whole host of programs from health care to child care.
I wanted to switch gears real quick, Congressman Style, since Kenosha's in your congressional district. Jacob Blake last night dropped the civil rights lawsuit against the Wisconsin officer who shot him. What has been the reaction from you and people in your congressional district, and has Kenosha rebuilt?
Yeah, I was just in Kenosha the other day. Kenosha is really resilient. It's a beautiful city down by the water in the summer. There's often festivals. A lot of people from Illinois come up and enjoy the beautiful lakefront in Kenosha. I think the average folks in Kenosha are ready to move on. They're ready to get away from the national attention from these three horrific nights that occurred and move on with the rebuilding. But it's really, every time I see that, it's a reminder of the importance of standing with the men and women of law enforcement. And when public safety is at risk, the answer is not shirking from duty when you're a public official. It is making sure that you provide the resources that are necessary to reestablish public safety immediately. An unbelievable lesson learned in a horrific way in Kenosha, but it's a lesson that every city in the United States needs to be reminded of, is when crime rears its ugly head, when public safety breaks down, it's a moment in time for real leaders to stand up, provide the resources that are necessary to reestablish public safety. Everyone has a right to feel safe. Absolutely everyone.
And the siege in Kenosha, the Christmas parade massacre in Waukesha. I assume that Wisconsin Republicans, starting with Ron Johnson, since he'll be in a competitive race for his reelection, will be intent on holding Democrats in Wisconsin, just as they should be held accountable nationwide, to account for their support for defund the police, for Black Lives Matter, their rationalizations and apologetics on behalf of those who laid waste to Kenosha. and committed so many acts of violence and destruction in 2020 and 2021. They really weren't held to account in the 2020 presidential election. It seems to me 2022 is when they should be.
Absolutely. We have a huge governor's race up in the state of Wisconsin. We have a liberal Democratic governor that needs to be held to account. We have to hold these DAs who hold a totally different worldview. They want to coddle criminals rather than put criminals behind bars. They're creating programs that assist and effectively allow these folks to be simply released back into our society to create crimes once again. We have to get serious about the crime epidemic that we have plaguing the state of Wisconsin, but plaguing the nation. And I think it's a real opportunity to show a very clear distinction between where the left wants to go as it relates to public safety and how the right, how Republicans are standing with the men and women of law enforcement and are ready to provide the resources that are needed to reestablish public safety and actually lock the bad guys up.
And you still have a real problem in Milwaukee. You've got all-time or you know, last 30 years highs in violent crime in Milwaukee at present.
Absolutely. The crime in Milwaukee has been out of control, and what we have at the courthouse is a revolving door. As you recall, the individual who killed folks at the Waukesha Christmas parade was released on abysmally low bail. Oh, this is a problem that's plaguing cities across the United States where prosecutors refuse to do their job, and instead they coddle these criminals and allow them to continue to commit crimes. I'm of the view that the voters need to be reminded, and the voters are going to hold the Democrats accountable for these horrific policies that are making our communities less safe.
He is Brian Stile. He's the Republican congressman for Wisconsin's first, right across the border, right across the on the other side of the Cheddar Curtain there in Kenosha. Brian, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is The Morning Show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Insert Democrat Socialist here.
Runs the Democratic House floor for 30 plus years running. He's promising this and he's stealing that. Where can you get that kind of money? He's using your house like his own piggy bank. You ought to know by now. You can pay off your house here in Illinois, but you can never keep up with the taxes. Oh, how it's always been the plan to have a taxpayer pay no doubt. Not a matter of if anymore, but when. You're moving out. I said, when you're moving out.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. That theme music means it's time for our weekly briefing from Ted Dabrowski, who's the president of WirePoints, wirepoints.com, all things Illinois policy related. Ted, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy.
Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul, Barack Obama mini-me, has urged President Biden in a fashion like the Socialist Spice Girls, including Frances Parker Spice. Don't forget, we've got a connection to the Socialist Spice Girls. Great. Alyssa Presley, Frances Parker grad.
$40,000 a year.
Kwame Raoul urging President Biden to wipe away all the federal student loan debt. And when I say wipe away, I mean transfer $1.7 trillion from current debt holders to people who are not current debt holders to pay for that debt, because that's what you're actually doing.
Yeah, I mean, you've nailed it on the head there. When he's asking for a $1.7 trillion reduction in debt, you know, a lot of people are accidentally, you know, everybody's doing it, accidentally calling it cancellation as if, poof, that debt goes away. No, that doesn't happen.
It's a transfer.
It transfers over to all kinds of people, right? Ordinary people, low-income people, rich people, everybody else has got to pay that $1.7
trillion. Well, how about people that paid their own student loans off? I don't want to pay off other people's student loans.
Too bad.
That's the part that drives you crazy, right? There's a lot of people who sacrificed, suffered, did all kinds of stuff to avoid debt. I mean, they did all kinds of stuff to avoid debt. And now they're going to get shoved with debt from somebody else who, I don't know, maybe wanted to, you know, relax in the summers and take it easy and just borrow lots of money and not work for it. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, it's fundamentally what's wrong with America these days in terms of these free things. This is just the next free thing, free college. Some of that stuff is, you know, working on hundreds of thousands of dollars in debts, $50,000, $70,000. that's a ton of money to shove back on ordinary people who didn't do this.
I'm waiting for a state-level reduction in student loan debt from Jelly Belly and the Chicago Democrat Socialists in charge of the state, because, you know, why not? Why not intercede if Biden doesn't go as far as they would like to buy more votes? That's what they do.
Well, that's a good point, and I'm surprised that we haven't heard that yet. You may have just triggered a new idea.
Oh, great. I'm a font of new ideas for bigger government. New law borrows $1 billion to extend pension buyout option for Illinois state employees. That was signed last week by Jelly Belly. $1 billion borrowed to provide for current workers to provide for a window for retiring workers to essentially lump sum their pensions.
Yeah, so there's this plan that maybe some pensioners would rather get some cash up front, less than what they're owed over the whole period of their retirement, so get a discount. And, you know, those people get a lump sum. Maybe the state will save some money. But, you know, it's a little bit problematic, this whole plan. And, you know, maybe it sounds good on paper that we save a little bit, the retirees get some cash in their hands immediately. But, you know, we've never seen, and we've asked for it, we FOIA'd for it, we've asked for the numbers behind this. Are the savings really there? The actuaries say that there's money being saved, but nobody's ever published any numbers. So we're just back to here borrowing more money and effectively, you know, hoping things work.
Well, this
is the same old story.
That's really interesting, because this has bipartisan support. And, you know, when there's bipartisan support in Springfield, a good thing is about to happen. Bobby Martwick, who is now a state senator, he's the guy who looks like 20 pounds of manure shoved into a 10-pound sack. In case you don't know who he is. So if you see a guy that fits that description walking around, that's Bob Martwick. When this idea was formed by myself and Mark Batnick, we put our different ideas and partisan issues, worked together to find common, blah, blah, blah. Mark Batnick, Irvin supporter, supposedly conservative.
He used to come on the show all the time.
I'm delighted to see this program extended after successful implementation that has saved the state over $1 billion. He says it saved the state over $1 billion. And I look forward to seeing how much more we can save to finally overcome and move past our state's longtime pension crisis. Even if he's right that it's $1 billion, like we're on the cusp of moving past this crisis, what a load of, well, I'll say it again, manure coming from the conservative Republican. This is the problem with the state, generally speaking. Depending on who you believe, $140 billion to north of $300 billion in unfunded pension liabilities. And these guys are declaring victory over the pension crisis.
Well, this is what's been wrong with any pension reforms that are done, quote reforms that are done in Illinois, is that it gives them the power to go out and pretend and talk. You know, people don't follow what the hell a pension is. They don't care. A lot of them know their taxes are too high, but they can't connect the dots. So when they hear our lawmakers, you know, celebrate the fact that they passed this pension reform and the buyback and it saves, you know, they can just throw out the word billions. It sounds good. A lot of people buy it, but it's simply not true. I know that in the first round of this buyback that we did in Illinois, we saved about $400 million, supposedly. So it's not a billion yet. Maybe they plan on $1 billion, but it's chump change. It's not the reforms we need, but it allows them to parade around like they're doing something. And that's exactly what's wrong here in Illinois.
Something else on that, too. And you've made this point for years now, and it needs to be made repeatedly. The idea that you can catch up if you don't address the structural benefit regime provided by these defined benefit pension plans. You cannot catch up through creative savings on the margins and so on and so forth. You have to restructure the benefits that are being provided and being accrued on a daily basis.
Yeah, you have to fix this thing. It's just like having too much debt. You know, you can just try to pretend your way out of it. But I always remind people, this is the bottom line, that people are fleeing here in record numbers. And so we can pretend to do whatever we want. But as long as we keep losing more people than the rest of the country, and we never know, is it going to speed up the outflow of people? Is it going to like really pick up? When you have all these debts growing, they don't do anything about them. They just play at the margins.
But the benefit levels here, I think people need to be reminded what the benefit levels are for state pensioners here as compared to the rest of the country.
Oh, yeah, and that's the other point. You know, I remember when I first came back to Illinois after being gone a long time, You know, the whole argument was we didn't fund the pensions. We didn't put enough in. And you know, I even started jumping in on that, blaming taxpayers, right? You know, we didn't put enough. But once you run the numbers, you realize, holy cow, it's not that. It's that we've given away the benefits so fast with these, you know, 3% compounding COLAs and all this unlimited sick leave that turns pensionable and the spiking. When you add up all that stuff, our benefits have grown far faster than virtually every state in the country. So we could never, as taxpayers, ever keep up with those benefits. And now we're trying to do the catch up, and you can't do it. It's too late. It's done. No matter what you think about pensions and pension reform, it's too much for the people who are left here to have to pay all that catch up, because they'll just leave. That's the easier thing to do.
Well, is there a chance that the checks will bounce? I mean, that the money's just not going to be there?
I guess it all depends on whether we stop printing money at the federal level and how much we keep giving to Illinois. But, you know, if you look at the policies, and I keep thinking about it, you know, we've handed out so much money right now. If you look at all the programs that Pritzker has announced, you know, Lightfoot announced more money to help for the abortions. They're just handing out money as if I don't know. I don't know how to describe it. But the reality is that we don't have that money. So, it's short term.
We're paying for people's from neighboring states to come to Illinois, to come to Chicago to get abortions. Where is that money coming from?
Yeah, whose money is it? And so, you know, we have to be careful that we don't attract all the people who want and lose all the people who make. And that's what's happening. We're running the numbers last night that since 2000, you know, you have to add these numbers up. You have to look at all the people who migrated into Illinois over the last 20 years from other states. And then you look at the people who left Illinois to other states. And when you do the net of those two, we've lost 1.3 million people since 2000. Wow. Think about that, right? That's bigger than our top 11 cities added together, gone. And, you know, that's the problem.
This was a fun story, too. Speaking of Chicago, you know, a Chicago city government pretending that they're flush the same way that Pritzker is pretending that he balanced the budget and the state is flush and we're, you know, just on the cusp of
getting out of junk bonds.
Yeah, getting our fiscal house in order and all that business. This class action lawsuit filed against the city that argues that hundreds of thousands, perhaps, of those who've been ticketed by the city have been ticketed at levels like for, you know, not a moving violation, but the parking, the city sticker, those violations have been ticketed at levels that are more than the statute, more than the city ordinance allows. The projection is that if this argument being made in this class action lawsuit filed by the firm of Myron Cherry and Associates, if that argument wins the day, you're talking about the city on the hook for $300 million in paying back overcharging residents and visitors on these tickets that they levied.
Well, yeah, you hear about this, and I don't know the details of that, but I'm not surprised. You hear it all the time. We had a young man on our podcast recently talking about that, where you've got people who are wrongly sometimes ticketed, booted, and all that. They have these massive fees. They can't pay them.
Yeah.
And you hear it all the time. And it's a revenue source for the state, but for the city. But, you know, if it goes the other way, it's going to be a huge cost and unsurprising. But then again, it's just another one of the lawsuits to go with all the, you know, the ones that the police have to pay off.
It's also
$500 million, a billion.
Yeah, it's also another scam the city runs. And by the way, that's some of my money, too. So
right.
I'd like it back.
Oh, I just wrote a check for $270. Six miles over the speed limit, I mean, that adds up.
Well, and it recalls this lawsuit and this assertion recalls the red light camera tickets where the lights, you know, yellow to red were the time between going from yellow to red was less than state statute. And so all these red light tickets were illegally levied against people, too. It's always a scam with the city scamming its constituents. We were just talking about that with cigarette taxes last hour. Everything is a three-card Monte game with government in this city and this state.
Yeah, you know, the thing is the handouts are very public. You know, they make a big deal. Everybody knows that this, you know, $500 million or $200 million or whatever it is going to this group. But the part that you're talking about, the scam is hitting one by one. People want it one at a time, and nobody really, you know, they get ticked off. It's $50 here, $100, $250 here, and it just, you know, it just eats away at people. But, you know, it's less public, and I guess this lawsuit makes it more public. I certainly know when I hit that yellow hike in Chicago recently, I was amazed at how fast it was. I'm a suburb guy, and so when I went in there, boy, did I get hit fast, and I paid for it.
Mm-hmm. I tell the judge, I was like, but judge, you're at the point of no return where you can't stop and back up because it'd be a hazard. And that didn't work either, so just don't try that, okay?
Can't fight City Hall. Ted Dabrowski, President of WirePoints, WirePoints.com, all things Illinois policy related. Ted, thanks as always.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You switched to Chicago's morning answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Here is my political action committee, people who play by the rules pack. Here's our latest TV spot on the Illinois governor's race. Take a listen and prepare to see it on your television screen.
What kind of Republican says he supports Black Lives Matter strongly and passionately? The kind of Republican who voted Democrat in 7 of the last 8 primaries. The kind of Republican who says this about J.B. Pritzker.
It is my honor to bring to the podium a great friend, a great leader who has guided our state with professionalism and compassion.
You know what you call Richard Irvin? You call him a Democrat. In the Republican primary, vote for, you know, a Republican. Vote no on Democrat Richard Irvin.
Mm-hmm. So that's what he says about Black Lives Matter. That's what he says about Pritzker. Yesterday at his press conference, here's what he said about Trump.
Let's talk about Bailey's record for us.
Did you vote for President Trump, and would you support President Trump if he ran again?
Listen, that's exactly what J.B. Pritzker wants. That's exactly what J.B. Pritzker wants, Oliver to be talking about. He wants to be talking about anything other than his failures and his record.
And I mean, it's just head scratching because he knew he was going to be asked that question because he always is asked that question and he always says the same thing.
Well, that sounds like somebody who didn't vote for Trump. And for more evidence in that direction, I mean, the city of Aurora Twitter account on the occasion of Biden's victory, Mayor Richard Irvin and the city of Aurora congratulate President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris on their historic election and empowering inauguration ceremony today. That sounds more than a pro forma, our president and so on and so forth. That sounds like enthusiasm, sort of the enthusiasm he has for Black Lives Matter and the lack of enthusiasm he has for President Trump, which is sort of remarkable as he spends tens of millions of dollars of Ken Griffin's money to accuse Darren Bailey, a 2020 Trump delegate,
which is a lie,
of supporting Biden.
Oh, and they're also saying Darren Bailey supported Pritzker's lockdowns. Do they not know that Bailey sued Governor Pritzker over the lockdowns?
The truth is not only a stranger to Richard Irvin and that campaign, it's an intruder because it's the same people who ran a low-down, tendentious campaign against Jeannie Ives in the primary against Bruce Rauner 4 years ago.
And here's what
the bad actors and the bad acts just continue repeating themselves.
Of course, he attacked his opponents, but, Darren Bailey was up there.
Let's talk about Bailey's record for a second. He raised taxes 81%, property taxes 81%.
And Darren Bailey responded.
What he's not telling you is the average tax increase was about 2%, the average levy ask. And we were asking this because state government was continually shorting us on funds.
He's talking about the local school board in Clay County and those decisions on the property tax levy to fund the school made at the local level. What he's also not telling you is that Darren Bailey and his wife started a Christian school. There's not a lot of school choice in Southern Illinois, and Darren Bailey attempted to rectify that in addition to serving for 18 years on his local public school board as one of those board members. That context is lost, and he's right about unfunded mandates, of course, being imposed by state government on local school districts in addition to what they have to do to deal with the state-granted pension benefits, an example of the biggest of the unfunded mandates that are moved in part down to the local level. But this is the sort of, dishonest campaign that you would expect would be run by somebody who's an enemy inside the perimeter of the Republican Party. And I'm not just talking about Richard Irvin. I'm also talking about the people running him. For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by Steve Cortez, our former colleague here at AM560 and a former Trump advisor. He now writes at his Substack, stevecortez.substack. So you check out his musings there. And he recently wrote a piece just yesterday, I think it posted, for amgreatness.com on the Illinois governor's race. Steve, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Dan, Amy, good morning. Great to be back on AM560.
So you decided to wade into the Illinois governor's race. I mean, you were a lifelong Illinoisan until recently. What's your take on it?
Yeah, and by the way, the reason I'm no longer an Illinoisan is precisely politicians like Richard Irvin. Those people, J.B. Pritzker, Irvin, and I would say actually also not a politician, but a political actor, mogul Ken Griffin. They are all part, unfortunately, of the same ruling class that exists for its own benefit to the detriment of regular citizens in Illinois, particularly working class people. And so those are the people who drove me and a lot of people like me out of the state of Illinois. But I still care very deeply about Chicago and about Illinois. And I do believe that there is actually a reasonable chance that a state that the Democrats assume that they have under control, a state is open to be flipped if we have the right candidate. Irvin is anything but the right candidate. You know, you're so right, Dan, to point out that not only is he a Democrat, he's actually quite a liberal Democrat. So the idea that he's in the GOP primary at all is really on its face farcical. Now, the only reason that he is in this primary and that he's getting some traction is, of course, because of roughly $40 million that Ken Griffin is spending, and I would say wasting, on trying to prop up a puppet candidate and trying to fool the good citizens, the good voters of the Republican primary. But the deplorables are not going to be fooled. The people of this country, of both parties, are in a very, very sour mood, and understandably so. So this is not an election year where people are going to take nonsense and shenanigans and fakery like we're seeing from Irvin in Illinois.
Well, you wrote in your article that Darren Bailey brings a Trumpian approach to political office. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so I mean, first of all, that he's very new to politics, right? Very much like Trump. I mean, he just got into politics in 2018, and he was an outsider, a businessman, family man, entrepreneur, farmer, trucking business. You know, as Dan mentioned, started a Christian school. This is a guy who had a pretty prosperous and happy life. He didn't need to be involved in politics, but he felt compelled to get involved because his Republican state representative was in favor of a tax increase. And so Dan Bailey ran an insurgent outsider campaign, very much like Donald Trump, won that race in 2018, then upgraded to the state Senate in 2020. And I think he still brings that anti-establishment ethos and agenda to politics. So I think in that regard, you know, he is in fact very, very Trumpy. He really channels a lot of what Donald Trump brought to politics. He's just doing it in Springfield instead of in Washington, D.C.
What do you make when you hear an answer on whether or not you voted for Trump like you heard yesterday from Richard Irvin?
Right. Well, I mean, it's just foolish, right? I mean, answer the question. I think we all know the answer is no. But, you know, answer the question. And for him to constantly just try to deflect and say, well, that's what J.B. Pritzker wants us to talk about. No, it's what Republican voters want you to talk about and want you to answer. You know, and I would point out, I put this also in the article, some of the statistics on just how deeply unpopular Joe Biden is because of what he's inflicted upon this country, particularly regarding the economy, but how unpopular he is even in deeply blue states. And that tells me that his allies, people like J.B. Pritzker, they are vulnerable. But we have to have the right kind of candidates against them. I don't think J.B. Pritzker is vulnerable if Irvin somehow became the Republican nominee. You would effectively have two liberal Democrats running against each other in a general election. There wouldn't be a stark contrast, and voters would probably just go with the status quo, you know, if that were the case. But, you know, getting back to that polling, according to Civics polling research, the state of Illinois, when Joe Biden took office, he had a 4% positive approval rating, approve over disapprove. He is now at minus 23 in Illinois. And we see similar polling in blue states around the country. So he literally, it's almost impossible in polling to have that quick, that rapid of an implosion, minus 27 points in just over a year in what is considered to be, you know, a deeply blue state. But similar reads in California, in Oregon. in other places where the Democrats have dominated. So I think this can be a wave election year. And if I'm right about that, then Illinois can elect a real America First candidate. And that candidate is Darren Bailey.
I know Trump didn't spend a lot of time in Illinois for obvious reasons. And
Safety reasons.
2016, right. And 2020. Right. But he is coming to Illinois to stump for Congresswoman Mary Miller in her primary for that seat downstate. And I wonder if you think that, you know, maybe he can be persuaded to get involved in the governor's race, too, as he's gotten involved in so many statewide races around the country.
Right. Well, I'm thrilled that he's going to be campaigning for Mary Miller. I think she is one of the bravest members of the U.S. House. She is truly an America First stalwart and fighter, and she's going to have a tough race, though. So it's great that he's lifting a hand to help her out. I will certainly do my part in trying to persuade President Trump. I'm still in very regular contact with him in trying to persuade him to indeed get involved in the governor's race, and that if he does, his candidate should be Darren Bailey, somebody who backed Trump very publicly and very enthusiastically, and somebody who, more importantly, embraces the America First agenda and really wants to try to improve things in a really, really troubled state of Illinois. You know, look, I don't have to tell you how terrible things are economically all over the country, but even worse so in Illinois because of the crushing tax burden. You know, for example, gasoline prices under J.B. Pritzker's 4 years in office have basically roughly doubled, almost exactly doubled from the time he took office until now. Now, it's a national trend, but it's worse in Illinois. Illinois gas prices are much higher than the national average. Street crime is absolutely out of control and no longer just in the, you know, so-called bad neighborhoods of Chicago, but rather all over the city and increasingly spreading out to the suburbs. So on these major macro issues, Bailey espouses a very Trumpian, very America First agenda of fixes. And given that, I think it's going to be at least attractive to President Trump. I don't know that he'll decide to get involved, but I'm going to try to persuade him to do so.
Yeah. And in the general, to your point, too, I mean, there are real vulnerabilities in this environment for Jelly Belly on the inflation issue. I mean, here's a guy who one of the first things he did as governor was he doubled the state's gas tax. That's the reason that Illinois pays more at the pump than the rest of the country, as you were describing. And so, you know, that's the sort of policy decision that should be a real albatross around his neck in a general.
No, absolutely. And again, it's the reason why people are voting with their feet, right? It's the reason why so many folks have moved next door to Indiana, or so many people have fled to Texas and Florida and Tennessee, you know, to these freedom jurisdictions. So, you know, we don't have to guess about whether or not his policies have a material fallout for the state of Illinois. They do, right? You know, it's material and evident and statistically provable that people and businesses are fleeing Illinois in droves. It's important to try to reverse that, and we can reverse it. That's the thing. I mean, I really do believe that it is savable, and in large part because of what's coming out of Washington, D.C. Joe Biden has so polluted the political environment with his massive mistakes, particularly related to immigration and inflation, effectively having an open border and having absolutely out-of-control price surges, you know, again, has put the country into a very sour mood. If you look at polling, for example, on consumer confidence, we are now below the spring of 2020 lockdown lows in terms of consumer optimism. That's what Joe Biden has done. That's what he's inflicted on this country. That creates an opening, though, in places, you know, that were assumed to be safely Democrat, like the state of Illinois, for the right kind of candidates. But given this opening and given this opportunity, the worst thing you could possibly do is try to dress up a corrupt and liberal mayor from Aurora and pretend that he's some sort of America First fighter. And you know, I just want to implore the good citizens of Illinois, do not let this mogul, Ken Griffin, buy your voter. Don't let him spend so much money that he somehow pulls the wool over your eyes about who Irvin is. He is a liberal Democrat who is masquerading in the Republican primary.
Steve Cortez, is there anything that would make you move back to Illinois, back to Chicago?
I don't know about that. You know, I'm in the free state of Tennessee, and I've got to tell you, I do love Tennessee. But listen, I love Chicago, get back there all the time, tons of family and friends, and I really want Chicago to succeed. It's important for this country. It's not just important for the people of Illinois. I mean, Chicago is the literal and metaphorical heart of this country, and the heart is sick right now, right? So we've got to heal it. We've got to do everything we can to make it better. So I do miss a lot about Chicago, particularly food. But there's also a lot that I love about the free state of Tennessee.
Sure. I think you bought Johnny Cash's old house on Lake Henderson, right? Is that, you got that compound? Yeah. Steve Cortez, former Trump advisor. He writes at stevecortez.substack. Check out his most recent column. We were just discussing at amgreatness.com, entitled A Heartland Battle for the GOP Soul. And it was also tweeted out by Steve as well as myself. Steve, thanks so much for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Hey, you bet. Thanks for having me.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Bit of an update from Lyons Township High School on that beating that took place in the hallway at LTHS South, where you had a sophomore named Heaven Washington beat up a freshman who is not coming back to school. We talked to her and her family's attorney earlier in the week. She's not coming back to school for the rest of the school year, the girl who was beaten. The person who recorded the beating and was cheering on Heaven Washington's beating of this girl has been suspended for 17 days. We only know that because he posted about it on Snapchat.
Right.
And we don't know the status of Heaven Washington. There was rumors that she had been expelled. We don't believe she's been in school, but we also don't know her status. And, of course, the school district is hiding behind disclosure
they can't
laws
disclose,
regarding the any disciplinary action they take. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The Western Springs Police Department has charged Heaven Washington with misdemeanor battery when it should have been aggravated battery, felony charges, and charged the guy who filmed it rooting her on with disorderly conduct. And now enter Jennifer Rowe, who we've mentioned before. This is the $150,000 dye director at LTHS. The school district, from an April 18th board meeting, as well as apparently, according to WestcookNews.com, a conversation on Monday night, is moving in the direction of restorative justice. Oh, what a shock. And they have been for some time. Restorative justice means moving away from suspensions and expulsions.
Oh.
Particularly for minority students. Replacing Jennifer Rowe told the Lyons Township School, Lyons Township District 204 Board School Monday night, she's replacing the school's existing code of conduct with a new one that would result in more oral warnings and fewer suspensions and expulsions, keeping even serious offenders like Washington on campus, particularly depending on the race of the offender. This is a conversation that's been ongoing for some time, it would appear. Rowe and the DI director and the principal at Lyons Township, Jennifer Tyrell, said that by June 1, the school will adopt a new non-discriminatory code of conduct model that's being used currently to minimize non-white student punishments in CPS, as well as in districts like Baltimore, Denver, Boston, and Buffalo. The approach will be greatly expanded moving forward in our work here at LT, Rowe told the school board, arguing that non-whites are unfairly punished because students and teachers don't have common expectations and common language. She said the school hosted a 101 training for teachers recently to instruct them on their racial bias. It also plans common lessons for students, she said, will lead to less racial bias and discipline. How about better conduct? Is that...
How about creating integrity and good citizens?
Well, right. How about better conduct from the students? Right. Is that anything that's of interest?
Too much to ask for.
Rowe is working off of this framework for revising school district codes for student conduct, published by the School Superintendents Association, that august body. A RAND study about this restorative justice implementation of this idea of restorative justice in school level finds the results to be lacking if you're interested in safety within your kid's school. Daniel Buck, writes on education policy. Millions of disadvantaged school children are consigned to academic mediocrity, emotional abuse, and physical threat in the name of restorative justice. Schools that adopted restorative justice experienced an uptick in bullying and classroom disruptions, that is. In my school, Buck wrote, we send students for a discussion with a counselor, gave them a walk break for behavior that formerly would have garnered a punitive consequence. Suspensions fell, but not because behavior improved. As he said, uptick in bullying and violence. By the way, restorative justice was the doctrine at Parkland down in Florida.
Oh.
And the treatment of that Parkland shooter, recall, the one of the administrators who brought restorative justice to Parkland High School from Chicago, from CPS.
Oh, that's right. Mm-hmm. And look what happened.
So we don't know what the status of Heaven Washington is, but we do know what the status of Lyons Township High School is and so many high schools and grade schools like it. You have a DIE director, a leading indicator of what's happening in the school. It is being diluted academically, and it is being made less safe. But other than that, it's going very well. Ryan in New Lenox, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer. Hey, Ryan.
Ryan, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yep, go ahead.
The solution to all this is defunding these DIE directors. I think people in your listening audience need to run for school board in this state on a platform of defunding these honky-type positions that are ruining the schools. Like you said, our kids are getting dumber and the schools are getting less safe. The ultimate, I think the real solution when you kind of get back to first principles is that parents need to view themselves and need to be primary educators of their children. When my wife and I are planning to homeschool our children, and the way the culture is now, my wife gets asked, but when are you going to go to the store and take care of yourself and run errands? Like what else could you possibly do other than, you know, pawn your kids off on a bunch of overeducated bimbos for 8 hours a day? The culture needs to reset and parents need to take up more responsibility for their children. That's the way this gets solved.
All right, Ryan, thanks for the call. Mitch in Waukegan.
Yeah, Dan and Amy, it's already going on. And in Waukegan, in a K-5 school a while back, a African-American student was suspended because he's a hellraiser. And the administration called the principal of the school and had the principal go and pick the person up at his house, bring him back to school. How you like them apples?
Mm-hmm. You know anything about this Robert Abbott Middle School in Waukegan, Mitch? And the drag queen show that I saw on Instagram?
It was in the newspapers. It was actually the library last Monday that
library.
Had the show. Mm-hmm. So maybe somebody from the school saw the library and invited them to come to the school. Wouldn't surprise me.
I see.
So it's a library group that got invited by the school to have a parade at the school?
Possibly. I believe that's the way it went, because I think the original drag queen show was at the Waukegan Library.
Sure.
On Monday.
Might as well bring it over to the middle school. Yeah, absolutely.
There you go.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Mitch. Appreciate it. 3 days after the attack, Heaven Washington's attack on that freshman girl at LTHS.
Yeah.
Jennifer Rowe, that's the DIE director at LTHS again, hosted LT's Building Inclusive Community Conference, which included 17 workshops to choose from on topics such as homelessness, equal pay, colonialism, gender diversity, racial healing, invisible disabilities.
Invisible? What?
Expungement of criminal records and the importance of voting. She also hosted a racial RX healing circle. Were there animal sacrifices?
After they got off the buddy bench?
Racial RX Healing Circle to, quote, invite participants into dialogue about their experiences surrounding race and racism, unquote. She called the healing circle, the racial healing circle, a vital aspect to restorative justice practices. So they really took that beating that was administered by Heaven Washington against that freshman girl. Seriously, didn't they?
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Dan and Amy, apparently Texas had municipal elections recently,
yeah,
like May 7th. And our friend Cassidy Campbell, he donned the cloak of a Black Lives Matter activist and attempted to vote according to Black Lives Matter CODA. This is how that went.
Hello. It's good.
Hey, how are you? Would you like to vote today? Yeah. You got your ID on?
Nah, I don't do that.
What
you mean? I need an ID to vote?
Yes.
That's racist, first of all. I don't need no identification to vote.
I'm sorry. We don't have it.
Oh, my God.
That's racist.
No, it's not.
That's racist.
You say we racist.
Nah, I'm talking about that is racist. If you asking for my ID to vote, I shouldn't need no ID to vote.
Yeah, we got to scan it. We got to scan your ID.
Yeah, that's some racist stuff right there. You know what I'm saying? And I was just down there. In Dallas over here, and they having some Cinco de Mayo thing. I had to confront them because, first of all, that's cultural appropriation.
Yeah.
They trying to appropriate the Mexican culture to make money off that stuff. You know what I'm saying? But y'all telling me that? So y'all here supporting this? You making me use my ID to vote? I ain't trying to use no ID.
You just too cool.
I am too. No, I don't need no ID. Y'all know who I am.
Nah, for real, though. I see you on
B. I'm Brian. Yeah, what's your name? That was my leg, shoot. How's the wrist? You know what I'm saying? Commit a few crimes. 3 months, then I can come see you.
For real? No, I'm saying, like, how long can you be out, like, you know, walking?
Oh, I can be out till 6:30.
Oh, okay, already.
Yeah, what you doing after this?
My God.
I ain't got nothing going on.
You trying to come through?
Hmm?
You trying to come through?
Nah.
Let me get your number, though, before I go. Can I get your number before I go? Can I get your number?
I'm married, actually. We both are.
Man, don't tell me about your problems right now. Shoot, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, that's what I thought.
You ain't lying about that.
Shoot, I ain't lying.
I ain't never heard that one. Don't tell me about that.
Shoot, you know what I'm saying? I'm slick with it, but you really want to make me use my ID? Look, let's just do this. You feel me? Let me write my name down and vote.
I wish we could.
These ladies are adorable.
She the judge? Oh, she the judge? Hey, let me do it in with you.
She the judge. She runs everything.
Can we do this?
Do what?
Can I vote? I don't need no ID for that.
You
know an ID is racist.
It's the law. Yeah,
so racism is the law? I abide by racism? I'm already oppressed enough. I'm 2% black. I just got my ancestry DNA test back.
Oh, my God. Oh
yeah,
my
I'm
God.
2%.
Oh, stop.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. I just recited the Pledge of Allegiance to George Floyd last week. Yeah.
We played that. He did.
It's like a... I'm trying to memorize and stuff. I said... no, I had
take
it.
Your time. This lady's great.
No. I pledge allegiance to George Floyd and the Black Lives Matter movement, to the causes to which they stand. With one sentence, I can't breathe. With methamphetamine and fentanyl for all. Yeah. Fentanyl for all. You know what I'm saying? Spread it out. You know what I'm saying?
Oh boy. I mean, the ladies were nice. They played along very nicely. So they're not the antagonists that so many of these city council members that he performs for are normally. But yeah, you know, not a bad effort. I like the him going outside of a city council meeting and to vote, for example, and we experience him in other contexts.
I'm surprised he didn't whip out the picture of his 14 children. Oh wait, he only cares about them during tax time.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.